Yours.
And test, test. All right. Sounds like we're good. All right. Well, Sean, thanks for doing this again. Sean Fessler is a colleague of mine and a good friend. And so we're going to talk a little bit about what some of the experiences we've had with COVID-19 and faith and religion and what kind of observations we've made. So the first question that I have for you today, Sean, is as far as like looking at the spread of COVID, in what ways do you feel like this has impacted the way that either you or different church leaders in your congregation reach out to your particular ward or your particular religious community?
I think it's greatly impacted because with being a member of Jesus Christ, the Latter-day Saints, you are such a close-knit community and you rely a lot on the ward and people within the ward, and I mean, you're serving and ministering and doing all those things. And when COVID happened, that community or sense of community was gone immediately. We were shut down, and I think that had a big impact on individuals who relied very heavily on that ward atmosphere. And so you had to turn to more to your social media things, to your Facebook, to reach out. And then I noticed also heading into that with us, we were on Circles before the pandemic, I think with Gospel and the Gospel app Circles. So we were in contact there, but I saw that really increase with people reaching out to people. And even some of the widows in our ward and widowers, where they didn't understand technology and you couldn't go technically visit them, I know they felt isolated and really alone during this time. And I think church leaders have done really good by, saying, hey, we're going to do the mask mandate there in July when that was introduced, try to stop the spread of this. But that's what I've seen go forward. Now, all of a sudden, these social media tools going forward, it's doing better. We're able to attend church and feel comfortable going and being around people in the ward. It's on Zoom and on those various websites that you can get for the church that puts out there for social media, and we're in contact and we're holding classes. Social media-wise, it's still there, but I still think there's a little bit of disconnect from the community overall because of COVID.
Yeah, for sure. And it's nice that, the church has been able to come out with a lot of these different kind of social media platforms. Just kind of with your own experiences, do you feel like there's been any in particular that have been more effective just for you and your family?
I like the fact that I don't have to, with being at a school, I'm around it every single day, and that scares me. This whole thing, I have major anxiety about contracting it, and then giving it on to my family or to my grandpa and grandparents and even my in-laws. That's really freaked me out. So for me, being able to stay at home on a week or on Sunday and be able to watch and participate still in the same thing as I would if I was attending church, I think that has helped me out to stay connected. The church has put out to say, hey, it's okay if you want to stay home. You don't have to come to the building. And then that way you don't have to face those people, because there are some people in our ward who are non-mask wearers. They're Trumpers and they don't believe in COVID, and they have adamantly said that they're not going to wear a mask, and you can't really turn them away. So I just So rather than have to the confrontation with that or have to worry about that, it's easier just to stay home.
Yeah. And like with those, like with the government mandates with like masks, do you feel like the church leadership within your own particular ward or in your stake, have they been struggling to try to like, you know, mitigate that issue or like to try or to try to sorry mediate? You know, do you feel like they're trying to talk to those people that refuse to wear masks or?
Yes, I think they have. They reach out to them, and I think it's really a touchy situation. I know our bishop, he's talked to them, but hasn't like came right out and said, "Hey, you can't come to church." But making others feel very uncomfortable with you guys not wearing it, and then even with the brother, and I think Elder Renland came out just the other day with a strong, because he just got COVID, him and his wife, and he came out with a really strong one that said, "We really need to wear the mask," and then went back through and showed where the church leaders have told us to. So I think it's still a very political thing, even in the church. I know that people are still, they still fight it in a political side, and I see that. I think it's a hard thing for our church leaders because you don't want to offend not have those people be offended and not come back to church. So I think it's a hard one. It's a very hard one. I think of putting it out there, but then again, people have that agency of choice. If they do it, if they follow it, they don't. It's just like, you know, the other things we have or are told to do.
Yeah. And it's tough because you see kind of this politicalization of, something as simple as like wearing a mask, and you don't want it to create this tension, but it has, you know, in a lot of different churches, and a lot of the different people that I've interviewed. Do you see, has there been any other pushback from ward members about any other of the regulations as far as, you know, at first when there was a time where we were actually all staying home or like having to sanitize or socially distance? Have there been any other government regulations that have caused that same kind of tension?
Well, I know, so my neighbors have four boys and a little girl, three boys and a little, and they are very particular to let those kids play with other kids in the neighborhood. There's a little boy down the road, he's not a big mask, you know, sanitized, I think. And they would only let them play with him outside. He wasn't allowed in the house. And then around the corner, there's another family, and they're what I call the Trumpers. They've got the flag out in front of their house and, you know, dangling from the signs and everything. And they wear their masks to church. So my neighbor, when the kids came over to play, my neighbors have told their kids, you cannot play with them because they don't wear masks and we don't want that here. So I've seen that way, you know, that side of it to where, and they normally, my neighbors are like the nicest people. They go out of their way to take care of people, feed kids that they need. I mean, they're super, super nice, but this, my neighbor Micah, she's really anxious with this, and especially because they got a baby, and so she's overprotective of it. So I've seen that, and the neighbor south of me, he has a little girl, and she plays outside a little bit, but not like she used to when this hit. So
yeah, that's tough, you know, and especially because, like you said in the beginning, the ward community is really, I mean, the bulk of your actual community, your neighborhood. You know, what you see happen kind of in church is also reflected in the way that people treat each other, you know, in the neighborhood as well. And so it kind of spills over. It's not just kind of in the church and then you don't see it again. You see it all the time. With some of those, kind of going back to the social media platforms, do you feel like any of these are going to be more like long term because of certain success that they've had, or maybe because the church is recognized, you know, if there's other circumstances where people can't make it to church, do you feel like this is going to be something that'll become more than just a COVID phenomenon?
Yes. I think this is like this idea where you can be home and engaged in a church. You can watch church and you're watching it using the social media platform. And I have felt the Spirit just as strong as attending church as I have at home. And so now once COVID's over and that, would I stay home and watch church? No, I would go just because of, you know, that's where I think sometimes you need to be. But I mean, for elderly or handicapped, for, I think this has opened up the idea and to get more people who maybe have that, those anxieties of coming together in groups or things like that. I think it really has opened the ideas and open church leaders to say, hey, we can get more people involved by using this platform than not. And I mean, our numbers, because I'm a ward clerk, our numbers are not too far off from where they were in attendance normally. I mean, our attendance over, we've been at about 54%, and we've been up to high as 56, as low as 52%. So really, we haven't dropped off in attendance. So people are still, I mean, you'd always want more, but I think, you know, people are still using, we have more people on the broadcast, the church broadcast, than do actually going to church right now. So I think it will. I think also opening up, I think circles, we use circles in our ward a lot, that platform of communicating, getting things out. I guess, I don't know if it's, I don't have Facebook, so I don't know. You know, you send messages, people respond, and I've seen some really good things from that side of it also in to keep people connected. So I think there's some really good things come about on the, as bad as COVID has been, I think there has been those positive things, like you said, the social media platforms. I don't think they're just going to go away. I think people will adapt to it and they'll continue to use them.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of positive that's come out of it. As far as like reaching out to people that were usually difficult at hearing from, or opening those channels for those that might not be able to come or had difficulty in coming. So those are some of the positive things. Have you noticed any, or are there any worries that you have about negative consequences of having more kind of like social media style kind of church?
Well, the one downside is I can think is people get complacent that you want people to serve, because a lot with the church is just service. And right now you're not able to do that. So I think you're out of habit of doing it. I mean, still people are serving, but you're not as, so if you stay at home church and then, and you have a calling where you're supposed to be at church, that would be a conflict. So I think those are things we're going to deal with in the next year. And also getting people, if we do say, hey, we would like everybody to come back outside of being sick or handicapped or something like that, to come back, I think that might be a negative impact for people to come back to church for the trust issues, and also just that they're out of habit of going to church. You know, maybe they hit here or there on Zoom, or, hey, we're on a drive up the canyon, we can Zoom it on our phone and listen to it. But, you know, so I think if all of a sudden you came in and said, hey, no, you can't do this, that could be a negative impact. I know it's both been negative and positive, like on our missionary work. Missionary work is totally flipped on how we do missionary work right now. I think it's been negative because I think there are some kids, some young, you know, kids can get out. They want to be active, and for them to be home, just working the computer and talking to people and doing Zoom meets have been a negative effect, but it also has been really good because they've been able to get and reach people where they wouldn't have been able to reach, but you have a different person to be able to sit on a Zoom call as to out walking around meeting and meeting people. So I think some of those issues are going to have to, will be worked out, but I think the missionary, with them able to do Zoom meetings in the ward is positive because we've done that with them. The Google Meets and stuff like that with the missionaries and talking with them to get people. So that's a positive. And also then, like I said, a negative because I know some young men don't want to go out on a mission just to sit in a room and be on a computer.
Yeah. It's like, if I'm going to go, then I want to go be somewhere, be with people. And otherwise it seems like you're at like a call center.
Yeah.
So as far as, so that's really interesting, and I would agree with a lot of what you said about like the idea of like this complacency and the worry. Has your, like you said, you're like in the ward clerk, has the bishopric or the ward leadership, have they mentioned anything about kind of in anticipation for that, what they hope to do? Is there going to be like a way to ease people back in or have some lessons about, you know, the need to come back, or do you know if there's been any talk about that?
Well, we talked, there hasn't been anything to like when is the right time yet, mm-hmm. because I think the vaccination, we just had our bishopric meeting last night, and as we were discussing this, the vaccination coming out, we probably won't be, we'll stay on what we're doing probably till next September, possibly October. To once everybody's vaccinated and have the vaccine, you know, and those. So, I mean, that was, our bishop said, probably plan on the way we're doing everything right now up until possibly October.
Wow.
Or till the next general conference that we'll be doing the way we're doing now, you know. So I think that's, but I know that's, exactly what you said, forward, how and what to do. I think that'll be some things come down through conference and the brother, and I think they are definitely right now discussing that. But the laid out plan has not came yet because they're still waiting to come. But you think about it, the normal person, I say not high risk or anything like that. What are they saying? We're saying until like July that you would have your first dose, and then you got to wait 21 days after that to get the second dose. So you're well into possibly September, October.
Yeah.
That's what at least our bishop, he alluded to that last night.
Do you know, is that something that you've just heard even among like your neighbors and other kind of just regular members of the church, if they've expressed any kind of concern or concern about kids being home and missing out on going to primary or young men's activities or anything like that?
I know, you bring up the primary side. I know that that's an issue. Our primary president, she put together a little thing and had all the teachers run over. But again, it's that contact. You know, put a little treat thing, a little basket together, and for the kids, you know, of course, store bought stuff, and they did that. But I think, you know, it's putting the responsibility back on the parents, and our church for a long time has been the one to be the teacher, and then the parents were a lot of just the enforcers. They just kind of, oh yeah, remember, it's, oh yeah, that's what you do. And now we've flipped. Parents are the ones that need to be children, and the church is just to reinforce what the parents are teaching. And I think that's a dynamic that's really, we're going to see in the church going forward, that it's more family learn more of the gospel principles within the home and not so much as that, like you said, all community, everything you do goes through the church, because we don't have those activities to do anymore. But we're still doing them. Bishop Anderson, he's done it for the last 4 years. He calls it Bishop Baskets. So he just takes names. We sit down as a ward council and write down names of people, whether just having a bad week or bad whatever, you know, welfare needs, or just had a baby or something like that. And we put 50 names of ward members that you can think of. And then we take around a fruit basket to all of these ward members. And so that's something that he's done to keep that sense of community togetherness. But outside of that, it's really difficult, because, like I said, we were really close as a ward. We would do weekly, monthly activity down at the park during the summer, where you just come down, bring it. One time we did a dessert. One time we did, you know, just not a meal, but just some appetizers and stuff. And we did it once a month, and you just went down the park and just socialized with people, and the kids played in the park. And see, with COVID, that all that's kind of ended, you know, all that in close personal, interpersonal relationships that you have.
Yeah, for sure. With those, like with you mentioned, like the kids, whether they're like young kids or teenage kids, do you feel that this pandemic has affected like any particular age group harder than another one in terms of like their faith or their interactions with church or church engagement?
I think what we've seen is the older kids. You know, your 14 to 18 year olds, I think they are the ones that are struggling with it. Now, like, that's just what I've seen. Like, the attendance for Sunday school and stuff isn't as high as what it has been in the past, those meetings also. And to get them there at that time, I think that's also an issue that those kids have. I've seen that. I haven't been around a lot of the primary kids. I know from my neighbors, just seeing my neighbors, that when you're a parent of younger kids, I would say it's easier to bring them together to have a quick little lesson rather than say to the teenager who has schoolwork, a job, or sports, or whatever's taking their time to come together to say, hey, we got to get together and learn this gospel principle, or, you know, it's 10:30, hey, get up, you got to go to priesthood, you know, on Zoom. I know that there's a real mental toll on them, because they want to hang out with their friends, and they want to be, part of them says, oh, nothing will happen to them. Part of it, they're like, oh, this could be scary, you know? So I know even with school, issues tie over in school, because some parents are very strict. So when they come home, they stay at home, where other parents are letting kids go wherever they want. So you know, sometimes kids hear, oh, well, so-and-sos are doing it. And so I know that creates an issue. I would say the teenagers, but then again, I don't have young kids. I mean, that'd be more on their side of the young kids, but they're saying the younger ones through this, are seeing even mental health issues arising because their normal little structures are so different now. So.
Yeah, for sure. You know, just like emotionally, and they've talked a lot about, you know, just depression and the anxiety that's kind of built up, especially around little kids that don't quite understand the whole, you know, economics of, you know, possibly parents losing jobs or being stressed out about work or anything like that is certainly taking a toll. For like those kinds of people, and I would think especially among like teenagers, you know, religion and faith can be such an anchor for them. with kind of the church leadership in your particular ward, have you noticed, do they make any kind of special effort to reach them and stress kind of the need for religion in times like this? Or are there any particular stories or lessons that they draw from to try to promote faith in a time of trial like this?
Yeah, our bishop, I go back to that circle thing, the app there, he puts out something to the youth. He tries to do it 3 or 4 times a week.
Wow.
And reach out to them. He does an amazing job to get the kids. He's even to those kids where parents aren't in the best situation. He's tried to get out and create activities for those kids to be involved in, and faith promoting stories. I've seen just with our kids, we have. I've seen a different. Some have been, like you said, grabbed a hold of the gospel because of the time we're in, and seen some great strides. In noticing, because I do the finance and help out sometimes with the money side of it. Last night I noticed that one of the young kids that he had paid his tithing, but also had paid a fast offering. And that is really one of those faith stories, that here's a kid who has this that he's putting into the fast offerings, when not necessarily does a teenager have to put into fast offerings, because that goes with his parents. But I thought, wow, that's pretty strong for him to do that. So I know there's those issues where the faith promoting, the kids are gravitating to the gospel and hanging on to it, because that's something that's solid and is not changing. It's still the same. Where everything else is chaotic, they can find the same peace there. I've noticed that with our youth and again, I tie that back to the bishop. He is always in contact with the youth. And the other bishopric leaders, they are always contacting the kids and making, through text, through calls, through working through the presidents of the organizations. They rely heavily on those presidents. Hey, go see this person, or go talk, or have we talked to this person? Is this, have you seen this person at school? So I think those activities are happening in our ward that I've seen. So it's from the youth. I think they're struggling, but I also think they're grabbing hold of the gospel, the ones that are not being complacent. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the stronger ones are getting stronger, and the ones that are being left behind, they're trying to bring them along.
Yeah, and that's tough to work with such kind of that kind of a dynamic, where you have some where you see so much success, and then you've got others that are really struggling. And what kind of message do you give, where that there are such mixed feelings about the whole situation? I was just thinking as you were talking about that, I'm sure for families where the whole family is a part of a church, that makes it easier to jump on the meetings or to organize, like, who's going to go watch, priesthood versus, primary or whatever it is. But have you noticed there any issue with, like, part member families, where maybe you've got youth that come from homes where they're the only member, or where, maybe their family is not as active as they are? And has that influenced them very much in trying to reach out to them?
We have a few, and really spotty that they are able to get on, especially youngers. We had a young woman. She's probably, I want to say she's probably 13. And then she had a younger brother that was 11, that was like just recently baptized before COVID hit. And I know it's really hard for them to get on weekly just for that reason. Mom and dad are out doing, mom and dad are non-members and they're out doing something. And so because of the lack of devices, they miss out on something that is a real concern for the bishop and the bishopric, and to reach out to those kids to make sure they get there to their meetings. And even for the youth to have their meetings, that's even been there, you know, to get together for young men, young women activities. Even the activities have had to been, some of them have been online, so not everybody can get on at that same point. So I have seen a drop off there. That's one that the bishop has talked about at length, exactly what you said there. That's, to get those kids, that's a real issue.
Yeah. With other difficulties related to the COVID, like with people being out of work or like temporarily, you know, struggling, do you feel like your church, like what kind of efforts have been made to try to reach out and help those people that are, you know, maybe in need, that have been out of work?
You know, we've got a few families that we help, especially one family. The guy had a stroke, and so he's in he's at home, but he's in a bed and he has nurse care and everything like that. So, we take care of his family on monthly, and a lot is done there. What is really crazy is the need for welfare in our ward, because people aren't spending and going and doing as much. People who have been given more generously. So we're able to take care of more people, and we've met the needs of our ward, which a lot of times we have to rely on the state to bring money in, and the church to bring money in to help, because we've gone over, you know, you just have to help them out. But we've been able to sustain our own effort because the generosity of other members. It's actually been a really cool thing to see that dynamic, and to see people reaching out to people. We had a family, their son was on a mission and he didn't get his endowments when he first left, and he's up in Washington, and they couldn't afford to pay the house payment and the plane ticket up to see their son. And we had a member of the ward step up and just pay their plane tickets for them so they could do that, because they said this is once in a lifetime thing for you. So little tender mercies like that are going on, where you're seeing that, hey, we have a need here, and members are stepping up and saying, hey, we'll take care of that need. Where last year at this time, we were putting together from, you know, we had it, but it wasn't the same. And also our welfare needs are lower. It's really a weird, I don't know how to explain it. We don't have as many families in need right now as we did even last year at this time, because they're being taken care of by ward members. It's like the ward's taking care of the ward. It's really a cool dynamic. I can't explain it. I mean, I can, because of COVID, you know, you're not spending as much. You're not going out to the movies. You're not going on vacations or little vacations like, well, let's go up to Park City for the weekend, you know, so the more affluent people in our ward are giving very generously, you're seeing it, and those needs are, if there's a need, somebody needs something, we take care of it. We had a little family, the mom, and she's mom and two kids, and the, you know, kids grow, and the one kid, he's now, he, when he was, got baptized at 9, they bought him a suit, but he's outgrown his suit, and so we had some ward members step up and buy him and his sister some church clothes got him a brand new suit. It's things like that that are going on that, yeah, we're not together. The welfare needs are really being taken care of.
That's really awesome. I never even thought about that, and it hasn't come up in any of my other interviews, the idea that in part because there are a lot of people that, you know, those that still have had stable jobs and income, they're not going to, you know, a lot of the recreational places because a lot of it's shut down. So they have that extra money and they're choosing to use that to support those that are in need probably more so than they normally would have. That's really awesome.
Yeah.
And is that something like, was that something promoted by the church, or do you feel like this is more of just kind of from the bottom up, they just kind of saw a need, fill the need kind of attitude?
I really think it's our community here in West Point. I really, this area that I'm in, I mean, if there is something they need, we're very, very open to. When I lived in North Ogden, I didn't feel that same way. There wasn't that sense of community. It was kind of like you mind your own. If the bishop comes and tells you, you go do it. But since I've lived out here, even over in Clinton, it wasn't even as much as the area here in West Point. And I mean, when we lived in Clinton, same thing. You would help your neighbor, but not like this. I mean, like if somebody's tearing down a tree, it's not unlikely that some three or four other members of the ward are jumping in and helping out for that or just something. They really just the call to it. We had a non-member. His house flooded about a year ago. Flooded just super bad. I mean, it was probably back in Georgia. And he was like, I can't believe this. I didn't know all of you lived around me and would come to my house. I don't even know, just to help me out. And like I said, they were turning people away because we had so many people just there to help, you know, rip out carpet, get it down. So I think it's our area. Just, I'm not saying it's not anywhere, but I think maybe within the church as a whole, I think there are probably other areas the same thing are happening. Probably not mindful of being widely spread, talked about.
That's really awesome. Does like your bishop, does he try to bring up those kinds of stories just to kind of demonstrate like as like a faith promoting experience for the ward, or do you feel like a lot of these are just kind of understood around the community just because it is so close knit?
He keeps them pretty quiet. He's pretty humble in, you know, as he does that. He just knows the people who were involved. He'll say it in the bishop, you know, that that's going on. But, I mean, you know, those who know that are doing it are doing it. And I really feel that people also in ward know that if they did need help, that they're the ward's there to help out.
That's awesome, man. Hey, well, just to kind of wrap up our interview here, and I really, again, appreciate all your help with this. I think it'll be something fun, you know, in the future when people are studying the effects of COVID to, you know, be able to look at archives like this and you see what regular people like you and I think. But is there any kind of final idea or thought that you had that you wanted to share about your perceptions of faith and COVID that you wanted to touch on that we didn't get a chance to?
I would say it really has, I mean, it's challenged my faith in the fact that I am horrified and have strong anxiety to be around it. Like, it was the first time in my life I didn't want to teach school back in August. After our meeting, you know, that one meeting we had with the COVID where they told us everything that's going to take place, I seriously went back to my room and called my wife and said, I don't want to teach anymore. It really freaked me out. And it was, you know, I had to really think about it. What is the purpose? You know, there's meaning to everything that we go through. There's a process of, I'm not saying the Lord sent COVID. I think the Lord prepared us to be be ready for this pandemic. And so strengthen my faith to fall back on the normalcy of the church, to serve the church in general, to know that we have a prophet that was leading, guiding us before this epidemic, you know, this pandemic hit, that he was preparing us before, long before this. And he also is along the way giving us ways to get through it. That has strengthened my faith. Yeah, I still have anxiety, but I know this isn't the end, and there probably are more to come and more, the closer, you know, the further we go, closer to the end of your life you get, other things may happen, you know, but I think it's strengthened my testimony of the gospel, because the principles of faith, hope, charity are everlasting, and a pandemic can't stop those. You know, the work has gone forward. We've just had to adapt, and that has strengthened my testimony too, to see, although I can sit on a Zoom meeting and still feel the Spirit of the Lord because of the message is true. It doesn't matter how it's true. And so that strengthened my testimony through this. I feel I'm a stronger member of the church through this, and to see the workings of the structure of the church also. That's a big one too, that how the church brethren have organized, put us together, and every step away, you're not left in the cold. We've adapted and created something new to move forward. Like the things we've talked about, the positivities, I think that we talked about, and those things positive have well exceeded the negative of the pandemic.
Yeah, that's awesome. Hey, thanks again so much, man.
No problem.